So she's going to continue and talk about black carbon losses. I guess Francesca could not make it.
Francesca had an emergency and had to return home to Italy. So I'm going to be giving her, or at least walking through her slides on the interactive effects of soil type on black carbon losses and black carbon losses as CO2 sequestration in different soils and different fractions. I think something got lost in translation there. So this introduction is very, very similar to your introduction, actually. And so basically the rationale for this experiment is very, very similar. It is actually the same incubation I was just talking about. Our justification was carbon has been proposed as a way of a stable form of carbon added to soil so that you actually have a form of carbon sequestration rather than loss with decomposition. And of course, some of that data was shown earlier, but basically with biochar addition rates, there have been studies that see on a per rate basis a decrease in CO2 production from biochar-rich soils. And conversely, there have also been studies that have shown that with biochar addition to soils, so if you have a humus soil and if you have the charcoal by itself and you have a mix, you would expect that your CO2 evolution would probably be, you know, a mix of the two. And instead, they found that the CO2 loss from the soil from that mix was actually much more like the humus than it was from the charcoal. And so there are questions of, well, if you add this biochar to the soil, is it just biochemical recalcitrance that causes its stability in soil? Is it chemical stabilization, interactions with the minerals that are present? Is it physical production? Is it encapsulation? So our research questions very much focus on carbon cycling. So can we say how much of this biochar is actually being stabilized, how much of the native organic matter is being lost with addition to biochar, and then further, how is carbon being stabilized in the soil to say, okay, well, are we going to get a net carbon sequestration? So this is our same experiment, and what I neglected to tell you in the previous talk was that we did actually have a change in the deltas between our biochar and between the soils. So it was a C3 biochar with a signature of about negative 27, and the soils generally had a C4 signature, C3, C4. So we added 5 biochar addition rates up to 20% weight by weight to those same 4 soils. We did 13C gas because we did a direct injection from our jars rather than the method that you did with the traps. And then we analyzed that 13C on an isotope ratio mass spectrometer. The soils we analyzed and then were sieved in a greater than 250 micrometer fraction, 53 to 250, and a smaller than 53 micrometer fraction. And that's, of course, to evaluate aggregation happening. So these are our soils. You can see they range in texture. They range in carbon and nitrogen content, as well as the 13C. We had one soil, and that was Michigan, that was a little more C3 than we would have liked. And then we had one soil that was acidic. And there was a small component of this project where we did the two sizes, a small and a large biochar addition to the soil. And so each of the biochars, they're very similar, as you'd imagine, since they came from the same oak, pelletized oak feedstock with a fairly high surface area, fairly high fixed carbon content, low nitrogen. So, again, a fairly recalcitrant biochar that we wouldn't have expected to be very mobile. And I showed you this graph in a slightly different color scheme earlier. Basically, this is cumulative respiration per unit. And you can see that for each of our four soils, CO2 respiration increases with increasing biochar rate at the end of the 420 days. If, however, you express it as a specific respiration, so if you account for the fact that you've added a lot of biochar to the soil, what you see is, of course, the complete opposite trend, where the zero BC is on the top and you get a decrease in respiration with increasing biochar rate because you're only mobilizing such a small part of that biochar that you added to it. So we used a mixing model to partition the CO2 from the biochar and from the soil and track its losses. And so this is the fraction of biochar-derived carbon over time for each of these soils. And what you can see really clearly here is that Minnesota is very different from all of the rest of them. Basically, in Minnesota, you have an initial pulse of CO2 that's coming off from this biochar, but later on, you have basically a lot of the biochar being used, or none of the biochar, excuse me, being used, that you have soil organic matter being used. Whereas Michigan, Colorado, and Iowa, basically, the more biochar you add, the more of it throughout the incubation that the microbes are using and decomposing. I'll just point out for Colorado, the two sizes of BC, they do seem to have a slightly different trajectory, so size may matter. So when we convert that to totals that are coming off of our incubation, we only get between 1 and 3% of the total added respired. And what's really fascinating about this is that there is a temporal dynamic, right? So at the beginning, particularly in Michigan, you see that the microbes maybe aren't using the biochar quite so much, and they're using much more of the biochar from the smaller rate additions. And that there does seem to be that time shift anywhere from about 100 to 200 days where something changes in many of these soils. So if we calculate or we proportion the amount of CO2 that's lost between the soil and that's from the soil and from the biochar as we increase biochar addition rate. So from the BC is the green, and from the soil is from the red. What's striking if you look at each one of these is that it seems to be very soil dependent. So if you look at Colorado, you actually see that the more biochar that you add to the soil, the more the microbes or the more CO2 you're getting actually from the biochar. Whereas in Minnesota, what you see is when you add more and more biochar, you have more and more respiration that's actually coming from the native soil organic matter. And these actually are orientated with increasing soil organic matter. So Colorado is the least, Minnesota is the highest, and Iowa and Michigan are in between and have somewhat of an intermediate response between the two. And that somewhat suggests that the microbes are preferentially using the soil organic matter when there's a lot of it around. And when there's not a lot of it around, they're chewing on the biochar. So with increasing biochar addition rate, the percent of the initial biochar that is lost from CO2 decreases logarithmically and is different from each of the soils. So Colorado and Iowa lose the most without biochar, and that continues down through the biochar addition rate. So this is the aggregation, results. And basically what you see, it's mass. What you see is that each of those lines, so the blue is the macro aggregate, the red is the micro aggregate, and the green is the silt plus clay. And you see pretty much flat lines across everything. So that indicates that there's really little difference between treatments on aggregation. So we see, and we were very surprised, we see no effect on soil aggregation with increasing biochar rate. When we partition the organic matter from the, when we partition into carbon from the soil and then carbon from the biochar, what you can see is, look at the green and the purple bars. What you see is the green and the purple are the micros and the silts and clays, and those were the two places where we added biochar. So the biochar is the contribution of the F is highest in those fractions, and that's where we tended to add the biochar. Although there is a small proportion of that biochar that is getting into the macro aggregate fraction, and you can see it does increase a little from the 10% to the 20%. So with increasing biochar addition rate, the converse of this is how much is remaining, and you can see there's a linear increase in biochar stabilization with biochar added, which is what you'd expect if you were adding a recalcitrant substance to the soil. And so our interest in this is that there's been the hypothesis that soils saturate with respect to organic matter, at least in terms of plant residues, manures, compost. And what we currently see with this incubation is that the biochar seems to have a linear increase, and you could potentially add it above and beyond what you'd be able to achieve with, say, a more conventional residue addition to soils. And that's not to say that you wouldn't expect erosional processes or other transport mechanisms, or just maybe your soil to fall apart if you add too much. So our conclusions are that biochar addition rate increased CO2 efflux but reduced specific respiration rate, and that we see this difference in response between the high carbon soil and the low carbon soil, so that we lose carbon in the soil that has the highest carbon there. And so we're seeing some interesting lack of effects with soil aggregation. And so I guess we're going to do a little bit more work into the reason why we're not getting some nucleation around the biochar as we would expect. So generally we can say that it appears that biochar seems to be a powerful way to sequester soil, and potentially, I'd say, without saturation. So we'd like to thank Kim Magrini, who created the biochar for us, Dan Royce, CSU, the China Scholarship Council, and USDA GraceNet for funding. And I will be happy to try to answer your questions. That's Francesca, who's not here. Yes.
That's all very interesting, and what I have one concern.
Yeah.
Three of your soils have very high pHs.
Yes.
Which I assume means that they're calcareous.
Yes.
In nature.
Yes.
Also, your chars.
Yes.
Have quite high ash content. Now, so there's more than you're assuming that all the CO2 that you see comes from. Mm-hmm. Organic carbon.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got two powerful sources
mm-hmm.
of carbonate or
mm-hmm.
bicarbonate.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know where the CO2 is coming from? Even if it does come from the soil, which I suspect some of it does, it means that the organic carbon is even more stable than you're saying, because some of the CO2 isn't from decomposition of the organic. So
mm-hmm.
my basic
mm-hmm.
question
mm-hmm.
is, how do you know where the CO2 is coming from?
Is the treatment of that. I would have to go back and look at our 13C data. But I don't know whether we've explicitly accounted for the 13C that would be coming from the inorganic sources, basically.
Yeah. The signal in the ash, which is the same as in the charcoal, because that's where it's...
Sure, sure. Oh, yeah.
The signal in the soil would be different.
Right, right. And I think, at least if you look at the some of the CO2 flux initially, I think that's probably what you're seeing here, at least in Iowa, is that initial flux coming off of potentially the inorganic component of the biochar.
But what I'm saying, in the Minnesota, you see, it's almost zero, whereas in the calcareous, three calcareous soils, it still carries on going.
Right, I see what you're saying, but the contribution that's coming from the soil should
might
be
from the soil.
it could be coming from the soil, would seem to be consistent throughout all of it if you follow the lower with your. I'm going to have to ask Francesca how she accounted for that, because I'm not sure.
Why are you asking Francesca that? Could you ask her about Minnesota?
Yes.
Which is an acid soil.
It's an acid soil.
Actually, probably contains some precursor carbonate.
Probably.
To an acid soil. So that very rapid initial might be
a... Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Definitely.
So that's the inorganic.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Mm-hmm.